The story of Pakistan is a chaotic and often violent tale of holding on to some traditions and breaking free of others. There's the tension with neighboring India, a traditional enemy that also shares deep cultural roots. There's the tension of modernism. Pakistan is a young nation, but its religious and ethnic identities are ancient. It is a nation where symbols of leadership for women include the late Benazir Bhutto, a complicated figure, the daughter in a male-led political dynasty, and also an independent woman who opposed corrupt male military elites. She was assassinated. Young Malala Yousafzai is another such symbol. She won the Nobel Peace Prize by fighting for the right to education for young girls, but she was nearly killed by the Taliban. Writer and journalist Rafia Zakaria says in her book, The Upstairs Wife, that there are such symbols of women fighting for freedom in every household in Pakistan. They're a part of the nation's history. In Rafia's case, the symbol for her as a young girl was her fighting aunt Amina.
I see her as a feminist, and the reason behind selecting her was that I feel that the Pakistani narrative, particularly in the American imagination, unfortunately is one which is very much defined by this problem that has to be solved. And unfortunately, and with all due respect to Malala, we're not all schoolgirls running away from the Taliban. We have an emotional complexity to our problems that exist just as it would in American society or in any other country. You cannot solve all of women's problems by building schools or, you know, any such reductionist solution. With a country like Pakistan, I think Americans are very susceptible to taking one figurehead and then distilling all of Pakistan's problems or complexities or issues into that one figurehead. And unfortunately, you know, the consequence of that, of what I would call now the schoolgirl feminism, is that it's condescending to the struggles of South Asian women, of Pakistani women, that have been going on long before Malala and will go on long after her.
Talking about Benazir Bhutto, you describe how important her history was to your family history and how they intersected at a certain point. I'm wondering if Benazir Bhutto represents a success of a woman trying to fight back the patriarchy in Pakistan, or someone who had to almost become a kind of man to succeed, that she had to give up her femininity to succeed in Pakistan, as you view her.
That's precisely the question that I struggled with both as a child, watching Benazir come to the political scene of Pakistan and watching her, you know, be in these rallies that were just almost entirely made up of men and still forcing her way through and speaking. And it's a mixed message. I mean, the contemporary frustration that I have is that this was the most powerful woman in Pakistan. She was assassinated, and we still don't have any answer to as to really what happened and who killed her. And so that is the theme through the book, is that at what point will there be accountability for the women who have died, you know, serving Pakistan, so to speak, in different ways. And as a child, again, it was a question because, you know, on one hand, I saw her in these political rallies and being this very iconic figure. But on the other hand, I also saw her ascribed to roles that are very, very traditional to women. Her wedding to Asif Ali Zardari was televised in Pakistan. I saw it as a young girl. And I was frustrated because every single woman I knew, and I was being told, was that you have to grow up and be married and have children. And so I very much wanted an example of a woman that would not do that. And Benazir, in some sense, represented a hope of someone who would break the mold and show that you don't have to ascribe to every traditional role to be a Pakistani woman. That didn't happen. You know, she chose to have an arranged marriage and then had, had children. And that was very confusing to me as a child because it was definitely something that could be turned into, you know, my mother would say, well, look, even Benazir has to get married and have children. And I didn't have a response to that, and I very much wanted to. So in that sense, you know, I'm complicating Pakistan's story for Americans because I'm showing that there is no single way to be an empowered woman. There is no single way to be a peaceful country. That there are lots of contextual, cultural, and elements that happen, and a lot of Western complicity in Pakistan's present. So, you know, when people look at Pakistan today, and it's like the backdrop to Zero Dark 30. You know, it's the country where Osama bin Laden was, or it's the country you see through the scope of the American sniper. But it's more than that. You know, I wanted to definitely humanize Pakistan's narrative and to try to show people what it feels like to be Pakistani in this moment, and how we got here, and how American complicity is very much an element of how Pakistan got to where it is today.
It's also, as you described there, the chaos of Punjabis and Afghans and Kashmiris and Sindhs and Muslims and Hindus living together in a place that some have described as merely an acronym holding a country together. Do you think Pakistan is going to make it?
Well, that's the thing. We have no choice but to make it, because the question that I wrangle with is this, is that, you know, while we might have regrets over the way life happens or a marriage happens or partition happens, we only really have the present to work with. So you can never really go back. In Pakistan's case, you can't go back to a time before partition. You can't make those decisions again. So, you know, the way forward for Pakistan is for Pakistanis to love Pakistan the way it is today, with all of its scars and all of its complexities and complications.
Do you love Pakistan with all its complexities?
Absolutely. I mean, I love Pakistan. And this book is a labor of love. It's very, very difficult to watch my country be castigated in the global narrative the way it is. It's very difficult for it to be equivocated just as a hotbed of terror, for it to just be part of a security narrative, a strategy narrative, without any concern whatsoever for the people of the country. So, you know, if this book is anything, it's my attempt to get Pakistan out of this terrorism, you know, narrative in which it's just the backdrop to American strategic interests.
But it's not some sort of patriotic rant.
It's a
story of a country that's hurt you, that's had the capacity to hurt you and women like you.
But that's precisely it, is that, you know, love and loving a country doesn't mean that you create a lie about it. That's the way I think Pakistanis, my generation today, has to take on this challenge, is that, you know, we can be upfront and honest and blunt about the problems that Pakistan faces today, but still love Pakistan dearly. And have a lot of respect for the struggles and the sacrifices, and in my case, of women that have come before me. I mean, after all, I'm Pakistani, and I'm a woman, and I'm writing this book. And that's an attempt to say that, well, if I've survived, Pakistan will also survive.
Rafia Zakaria is the author of The Upstairs Wife, An Intimate History of Pakistan. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.